Hail Mary from Cousins. It's caught! It's Kyle Rudolph for the Viking touchdown!
Welcome to the next episode of What's Next with Eric Wood. Our next guest is a good friend of mine in Minnesota Vikings tight end, Kyle Rudolph. Kyle is entering his 10th season in the NFL, all with the Vikings. He has played in two Pro Bowls, but even more impressive to me is the work he's done off the football field. He was a finalist for the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award and does incredible work in the community in Minnesota, as well as supporting a number of other great causes, including both of our alma mater, Elder High School. He is the first current active NFL player that I've had on the podcast. I feel like so many can learn from Kyle and how he prepares for the season each year and what he's doing to prepare this year with the changes because of the coronavirus. You will enjoy hearing about his journey to Notre Dame, choosing football over basketball, and much more. Enjoy.
Rudy, what's going on, dude?
Hey, Woody, how's it going?
I'm doing good. We'll start off quickly and that way we can utilize our full hour on here. How are you and Jordy and the kids holding up during this quarantine time?
We're doing well. We kind of got settled in, got used to what this new normal is like, got into our routine. Then we got some sketchy weather up here in Minnesota around Easter time. We got some snow and some cold temps, and we were stuck in the house for a few days in a row, and you know, the kids get a little stir crazy. We get stir crazy. But they're definitely ready to get back outside, start doing the normal things they do in the springtime, go to the parks, get out on the lake. So they're definitely getting tired of being around Jordan and I every day.
Yeah, I feel like our kids are in the same deal, and they just go to like 3 hours a day school, mom's day out type deal. But they're definitely – they want so much attention from us all the time. I'm like, all right, you guys got to play with each other and do your thing. And we could sit here and goof around and potentially get some laughs, but inside jokes on a national broadcast, because this will become my podcast this upcoming Monday. Probably not the best idea, but we'll have some fun, especially since you were supposed to be coming to Louisville tomorrow for the Kentucky Derby, which is postponed till September now, which because of you playing football and me hopefully broadcasting, we will both likely be out for the Kentucky Derby this year. But we'll push it back 1 year. And one thing I like to do with guests that I know is have their wife do an extended intro off of what I will have already introed you with. So Jordan says, Kyle has a heart of pure gold. He's a phenomenal tight end on the field, but the person, friend, son, brother, husband, and dad he is off the field far exceeds anything else. He works harder than anyone I know. He's the best dad to our three kids and always keeps us laughing and entertained. Our hearts are at the Masonic Children's Hospital here in town, and they like to say that Superman wears a Kyle Rudolph cape. The four of us in this house like to agree with that. And I couldn't have done any better with that intro. That's awesome. I thought Jordan was going to crack a few jokes on you, and she didn't. But it's all good. I'll crack mine throughout the podcast. But let's start off. We both went to Elder High School. Storied program in Cincinnati, and you were a star in football and basketball. Did you ever think you might go into playing college basketball instead of football?
I did. You know, for me and back then, the recruiting process was different than it is now. You know, the football recruiting process starts way earlier than it did back in the day when you and I got recruited. But basketball recruiting really hasn't changed much. It's not unusual for these college basketball coaches to have eighth graders, freshmen, sophomores on their radar that they're talking to. And so for me, I was fortunate to have, you know, get a few minutes as a varsity basketball player as a freshman. And, you know, I didn't play varsity football as a freshman. I played freshman football. So, you know, I immediately thought like, okay, well, you know, I love football and, you know, I never would quit football to play basketball, but you know, my future is as a basketball player. I'm playing varsity basketball as a freshman. So, you know, I went to a few camps that summer, and I remember, I think it was between my freshman and sophomore year, maybe sophomore junior, I can't remember, but I was super pissed at my parents because they didn't allow me to go to Wake Forest, was having like an elite recruit camp, and Coach Prosser was there at the time, Pat Kelsey, who's now the head coach at Winthrop, was one of his assistants. And, you know, they wanted me to come down and play against all of their top recruits in the country. And Elder was having their Wyoming retreat that summer. And my parents made me go on the retreat and didn't allow me to go to this camp. And at the time, like, once I got back from Wyoming, I had an absolute blast. It was my first time ever being out west, being kind of in that scene. You know, your cell phone doesn't work. Like, you're just unplugged for a whole week. And it was awesome. It was great for me getting to know a lot of my classmates at Elder. And I, looking back, I 100% made the right decision. But at the time, I was just so mad because all I wanted to do was go play basketball. And, you know, I had an opportunity to go play against some of the, you know, most talented players in my class, in the class above me, and in the class 2 years ahead of me. So pretty much through my sophomore year, I still thought, you know, basketball was going to be my thing. Again, I love football. I went to a couple football camps in between my sophomore and junior year, and that's really when football recruiting started at that time. You know, you couldn't receive an offer till September 1 of your junior year. And then I had all these basketball coaches calling nonstop. So, football recruiting picked up my junior year, and, somewhere between my sophomore and junior year, a lot of people convinced me that there's a lot more tight ends that look like me and are my height in the NFL than there are, small forwards in the NBA. So I listened to them. It's hard for me at this point in my career, you know, having been here in Minneapolis for going on 10 years, being in one spot, being fortunate enough to go to a couple of Pro Bowls, to go back and regret that decision. But I do wonder what it would have been like and if I would have been able to make it to the NBA.
Yeah, no doubt. And knowing your parents, Dan and Jamie, it surprises me that they wouldn't let you go down there and go to that basketball trip and had you go out west. But you end up as the number one tight end in the country coming out of high school, and you end up choosing Notre Dame over really anywhere you wanted to go in the country. What led you to choose Notre Dame?
You know, it's funny. So obviously Ohio State is right up the road and under 2 hours from home. I went to a lot of the Big Ten schools. We liked Michigan a lot at the time. Coach Carr was the head coach and Mike DeBoard was his offensive coordinator, who was also the tight end coach. And, you know, they were rolling out 2 and 3 tight end sets every week. And, you know, for me, I wanted to play right away when I got to school. So, you know, I was looking for opportunities to play as a freshman. And obviously, the more tight ends that are on the field, the more opportunity I had. And
no doubt.
We went up to South Bend for a visit. And at the time, you know, going back to my previous comment, Notre Dame basketball had already recruited me. And I remember thinking, you know, it would be cool to play basketball at Notre Dame because the football program is so storied. And, you know, I'd be able to go to the football games. And obviously, I love football. So being around a school that has such a storied football program would be really cool. And so at the time we went up for a junior day with no expectations and went through the whole recruiting deal where you know, Coach Weiss came out, spoke to all the recruits. He met with a lot of the position coaches before the game. And then, you know, coach had to leave and he said, you know, I got to go get ready. We got a game to play there, playing North Carolina that day on senior day in November. And one of his assistants grabbed my mom, my dad, myself, and said, hey, come with me. Coach Weiss wants to talk to you. And so they took us through Notre Dame's locker room in the stadium. We went into coach's office. And, you know, that's when, for me, it really kind of – the light went on that, you know, maybe I'm a lot better at this than I thought. You know, he pulled me in his office. He told my mom and dad that he wanted to offer me a scholarship to Notre Dame. And yes, I had scholarship offers prior to that, but, you know, he told my mom and dad that I believe your son is the best tight end in the country in his class. And, you know, really before that, I had some college offers, but, you know, I just love playing high school football with my buddies. I knew I wanted to play in college, but I didn't know I was on that level. So I remember coming home from that trip and I called my grandpa, who, you know, ended up passing away the following year as a senior. So he never saw me play at Notre Dame, but he was a diehard Notre Dame fan. And so I called my grandpa Rudy and I said, hey, grandpa, I got a scholarship offer from Notre Dame. And his response, like, wasn't congratulations or, you know, I'm so excited for you. He just asked, did you take it? And I was like, well, no, like that's not how it works. Like, you know, I'll go through this recruiting process and check out other schools. And he didn't understand why I just didn't accept it on the spot. And, you know, he was always super proud once I did commit to Notre Dame that following March, wearing his Notre Dame jacket, Notre Dame hat to all things on the west side of Cincinnati. And so for me, it was Coach Weiss. Coach Weiss played a huge role in going there. His connections to the NFL, his success with my position at the tight end position, both of the previous tight ends that were there before me got drafted. And then school, you know, obviously it's an unbelievable education. And, you know, I wanted to play football at the next level, but, you know, you look at the numbers and, you know, obviously that's on the very low end from a percentage standpoint. So being able to fall back on a Notre Dame education wouldn't have been a bad plan B. And then I would say lastly, the people, you know, my teammates that I got to know, people around campus, I just felt comfortable there when I visited.
Yeah, that's great. Man, lots of good stuff in there. I mean, a lot of your buddies from Notre Dame that you came in with, I've become buddies with, and man, what a special group you guys came in with. And I could see why that would lead to your decision. I think me and your grandpa would have got along really well, because when you only get offered one scholarship, then you just take it right away. And he would have understood that a whole lot better. He would have understood that recruiting process. No, that's all great stuff. So you end up going 43rd overall to the Vikings. I was at your draft party in Cincinnati. What a fun night that was. We won't tell too many stories from that. Those are the inside jokes that, like, we would think is hilarious at this point, but maybe some people would.
I actually missed most of it because I was in Minneapolis for my press conference, and I got home and we still had some fun, but I think you guys had more fun than I even had.
Yeah. I can attest to that. But now you've been up in Minneapolis through 9 seasons going into year 10. What an awesome career. And now you're building your dream house up in Minneapolis. And, you know, as a West Side of Cincinnati guy, you know, there's a lot of pull to go back to Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. What has made you guys want to keep your roots, keep your foundation up in Minneapolis?
Well, I think for us, you know, me being from Ohio, Jordan being from, you know, the South Bend area and Western Michigan, we're both Midwestern people. And, you know, we could relate to the Twin Cities as soon as we came up here. You know, we fell in love with the community right away. We fell in love with the organization. And quite honestly, we fell in love with the state of Minnesota because of the way that they embraced us when we got here. And then, you know, when you're fortunate enough to be in one place for a decade and you establish the roots that we've established here, you make the memories that we've made here. And quite frankly, we still have so much more that we want to do here. That's why we want to be here for the rest of our lives. And having had all three of our kids here, you know, raising them here, you know, we're really looking forward to it. You know, we absolutely love the life that we've built in the Twin Cities. And, you know, we're looking forward to getting in our house, you know, our forever home, and continuing to make those memories.
That's great. And you mentioned falling in love with the community in Minneapolis, and you've made a couple Pro Bowls, but even since you entered the league, often known as one of the top two or three tight ends in the entire NFL, have that reputation your whole career. But what you've done off the field has been absolutely phenomenal. Multiple time winner of the nomination for the Walter Payton Man of the Year out of Minnesota. And then last year, one of the three finalists at the NFL Honors down in Miami. Where does that come from? Because you're honestly one of the most generous people I've ever met in my life, and you're generous with the community, you're generous with your buddies, you're generous with your family, you're generous with everybody you come across.
I think, you know, partly the way that we're raised on the west side of Cincinnati, the way that we're taught that, you know, although growing up we don't have much and we have everything we need, and that's not always the case for everyone. And, you know, because you are given everything you need, it's kind of a requirement to then help out others who don't have everything they need. And then I think you take the way I was raised, getting to school, being around Coach Weiss. You know, Coach Weiss has done so much for kids with special needs. You know, obviously a lot of people know the story about his daughter, Hannah, and, you know, her story. I learned so much from him in terms of how to give back, how to impact others. And then when I got to the NFL, being around guys like yourself, guys like Chad Greenway, John Sullivan, Steve Hutchinson, guys who took their platform and impacted not only the community that they played in, but the community that they lived in. And I think it was just being around guys who were doing so much good stuff. You know, I already had that in my nature. And then I just followed the example that guys like yourself set.
Well, you took that mentoring and absolutely ran work with it. And super proud of you, brother. And I've told you that many times. And all right, let's switch gears just a touch. You've been working with a nutritionist since you were 16 years old, and you've always taken your preparation, your training extremely serious, way before a lot of people do. Let us into what a normal off season would have looked like for Kyle Rudolph preparing for the season.
So for me, I think one of the things that oftentimes people don't realize is so important for us as NFL players is, you know, that month to month and a half immediately following the season. You know, if you're fortunate enough to get through an entire 16-game regular season, couple playoff games, healthy, and you feel good enough to start training right away, it's not necessarily the best thing to start doing right away. And, you know, sometimes you're not as fortunate and your offseason starts with a surgery or a rehab. And, you know, both of us have been through those scenarios. And, you know, at that point, you're just trying to get back to ground zero where you would have been had you been healthy to start the offseason. And I feel like when you're going through rehab in an offseason, you know, you're constantly trying to play catch up. And I'll speak to the healthy off seasons. And, you know, even though you feel really good a couple weeks after the season, you know, your body is still repairing and recovering from the last 5 to 6 months of right. wear and tear that you put your body through. So, you know, I feel like for me, about halfway through my career, I really learned that, you know, I have to force myself to take 4 to 6 weeks after the season and really lighten the training volume. And, you know, if that's doing cardio a couple times a week to really train my mind and to make myself think I'm actually doing something, then that's what I'll do. Or if, you know, we try to do a lot of our traveling and vacationing immediately following the season, so you can really just 100% relax and let your body recover. And I feel like since I started doing that, it's allowed me to, you know, really ramp up my training at the right time. You know, I usually kick it into gear about the middle of February, early March. We always report back typically in the middle of April. So we would be about 2 weeks into our off-season program right now. And then you incorporate a little bit of OTAs, mini camp practices in June. And then for me, summer was always about maintaining what I had built through, you know, June. And I wanted to make sure when I reported to training camp in July, I was ready to go and I didn't have to play catch up. And then I felt like that kind of schedule allowed me to play my best football in December. And I wasn't peaking in September and, you know, you still have 12 weeks left of the season. Right. It allowed me to feel good and to feel as fresh as you can come late December, early January, when you're playing your most meaningful football games.
Yeah, and you heading into year 10, man, that's valuable information for guys that are in college right now, high school right now, guys that are currently in the league. There's so many guys that don't have the proper routine. Either they started way too late, they wait till OTAs, or wait till you report back to get going. Then you're playing catch up through that time, like you mentioned. And then, or they hit it so hard immediately, which is I did at times in my career. But that's, to me, that gave me peace of mind knowing that I was working through that time. But everybody's different, but you got to find that rhythm if you want longevity in the NFL. And you hit it nail on the head. You can't peak in September. Like, you cannot go into training camp beat up from training. You can't go in fatigued or else you're absolutely shot. So that's a normal offseason. What's a quarantine offseason look like? Because I've been doing some speaking engagements for teams via Zoom calls and telling them what I would be doing. I want to hear what Kyle Rudolph is personally doing during this time.
So for me, you know, I got till about mid-March with a really normal offseason. Like I said, we took our time off. We traveled. We were actually out in California. And, you know, I was training in California before our agents, Athletes First, had their charity event. And, you know, that's when things kind of got shut down. The charity event was canceled that weekend. We laid low for a few days and then got back here to Minnesota on that Monday. I believe it was like March 15th or so. And, you know, typically for me, you know, I'd be ramping it up here at the facility in the middle of March, getting ready to prepare myself. You know, those are the kind of 4 weeks leading up to when we report back as a team. And I got a couple days in here at the facility, then NFL facilities got shut down. And really, fortunately, I had found a product called Tonal, T-O-N-A-L. I told you a little bit about it. And
yep.
I ordered it 2 weeks prior to the shutdown, and it got delivered that Friday. So, you know, I missed one day, and, you know, my Tonal got delivered, got installed, and it's allowed me to not miss a beat in terms of my strength training. Now, obviously, you have to get a little creative with your running and on-field routine. It's a little bit easier now that Minnesota has opened a lot of the parks and fields that are around. So, you know, I can get up there a few times a week and do my on-field stuff. But when we were in the shelter in place and the, you know, the big time restrictions were on, you know, you find yourself getting creative in the backyard. We have the little incline in front of our house that's, you know, steep enough to get good work, and it's gradual enough to do some good speed training on. So I got the kids out in the front yard and we were running the hill. So it really, it takes you back to before you had these all world facilities. And, you know, what did we do in middle school at Our Lady of Visitation when we wanted to get a workout in? You know, we went up to the field and ran the hill a few times and did push-ups and sit-ups and crunches and things like that. And that was how I stayed in shape up until I got, you know, the Tonal, and now I'm able to get on fields around town.
Yeah, it's great that you're making use of your resources. And what I've been trying to tell everybody is this is a time where you could pass people up, because if everybody was at the facility, everyone would be doing the same exact thing. And everybody's competition looks different. Like, your competition is the defensive ends, the outside linebackers you're going to face, the people in coverage you got to beat. And then your competition is also the other tight ends that you got to beat out for the all-pro team. Well, for some guys, it's their competition is guys on their own roster. Right. And if everyone's doing the same thing, how are you gaining ground on them to go get a roster spot? So that's what I've been trying to pour into guys. Like, you need to be doing something to separate yourself this time, at this time, and not waste it. And on this same note, how are virtual OTAs going? I can't imagine, with my attention span especially, I cannot imagine sitting through these Zoom calls and trying to go through these full installations.
You know, and I thought the same thing when the idea was proposed. And, you know, we're on Microsoft Teams. And quite honestly, I have my Teams app on my personal iPad. So, you know, you pull that up and it had, you know, for instance, we're doing pretty much all, we had a team meeting, but we're doing mostly position specific stuff. So, you know, it's my tight end coach, the four other tight ends in the room. We're in a meeting. He's able to share his screen just like we'd be looking at the projector or the smart board in our meeting room. And then he's able to roll through it. And it allows me to have my personal iPad set up with him on the screen, the rest of the tight ends in the room, and then have my work iPad, my playbook, and my notebook next to me, you know, just like I'd be sitting in the meeting room. So, you know, and it's just an hour and a half. That seems like the hour and a half kind of flies by once you dive into an install. And, you know, like most of us, when the season ends, you don't think about football until you go back to the facility. And then you start throwing around terminology and words and, you know, blocking schemes and calls. And you're like, oh, yeah, like it just, it comes back immediately. So the biggest thing for me that I've seen beneficial is really just getting back immersed into that environment where I'm hearing calls again, I'm hearing terminology again, and it comes back immediately. But if we weren't able to have these, like in 2011, where you can't talk any football with coaches,
right?
Now you're going all the way till late July, early August without doing anything, without refreshing your memory. So I found them to be really helpful. The time goes faster than you think. The meetings aren't as long as they seem. You know, I think back to college, like sitting through a 90-minute class seemed like an eternity. Right. But one of these 90-minute meetings seemed to go pretty quick. As you know, it's not unusual for us to sit in a meeting room for hours and hours on end.
Right. And some of that meeting time, you're joking around with each other. Are you still getting that interaction? Like, are you guys still cutting up on each other?
Yeah, and it's fun because, you know, obviously you can, you know, while your coach is up there, you're in the team meeting, One of the things that I found entertaining so far is like when guys don't know how to mute their screens, or like they
Right.
just joined the meeting and they haven't muted their screen and they're talking to so-and-so at their house, or, you know, dogs barking in the background, you know, whatever it is, that's been entertaining. And then, you know, also too, it allows us as we're all sitting there watching the same tape or going through the same install, you know, you can still interject the comments and the stuff like that you would do if you were sitting in the meeting room.
That's cool. Staying on the Vikings, what do you think of the draft?
You know, it was exciting. You know, I knew we had a lot of picks going into the draft, and Rick has historically used picks to move around and not necessarily used every pick to draft a player. But we have 15 draft picks. I think we signed about 10 undrafted free agents, so we'll have 25 rookies that come in this year. And, you know, quite honestly, when you have a roster that's structured the way ours is, and you have a quarterback that's making $30+ million, you have a couple skill players that are making really good money, and a lot of guys on defense that are getting paid really well, you have to have a group of rookies that are contributing to your team and playing good football for you, or else you're not going to be able to pay 53 guys. So,
right.
You know, we kind of threw a net over a few different needs that we had in the draft. And, you know, I look forward to getting to know these guys. And, you know, I said a couple times this offseason when I was asked about the departures of some of our staples over the last 6 years, and, you know, you lose a lot of veteran players. And, you know, I have all the faith in the world that Rick and George Payton and everyone in our scouting department is going to be able to replace the talent. But it's my job as a leader in the locker room to instill in these guys what it means to be a Minnesota Viking, you know, what it means to this franchise to go out and work every day to try to be the first team to ever win a championship in the almost 60 years of our organization. So, you know, I look forward to that. Like I said, I wish we were able to be together right now because it'd be a lot easier. But, you know, whenever that time comes and we're able to get together, you try to get those guys up to speed as quick as possible.
Yeah, and when you draft as well as Minnesota has, and when you have a coach that's been there as long as Zimmer, so you're not switching up schemes, especially on defense, you're going to accumulate too many stars at some point, especially when you don't have a young quarterback. Buffalo's got the luxury of having Josh Allen right now. He's still on his rookie deal, and you could kind of hit this sweet spot in year 3 and 4 on a rookie quarterback, which is Buffalo's kind of got a 2-year window where they're able to pay a ton of guys. But yes, they're gonna be in the same boat as well. Alex Harbin just put in a great question. What do you think about adding that extra game to the season?
I think, you know, with all the new changes of the CBA, you know, they extended the rosters, added more guys to the active roster as well as practice squad. You know, we eliminated one preseason game, and, you know, oftentimes people will think, well, that's not apples to apples. You're taking away a preseason game that you probably wouldn't play in anyways, or maybe you play 10, 15 snaps, and you're adding an entire regular season game where, you know, most of the time, you know, I'm playing 65, 70 snaps in. And, you know, at first from 10,000 feet, you're like, well, yeah, that's true. But when you actually think about it, you know, adding a 17th game of revenue is huge.
Right.
But then when you actually dive into it and when you think back to what that week in preseason was actually like, yeah, you may have only played 10 to 15 snaps in the game, but you had your day off the next day, and then you were back in full pads 2 days later, and you had 5 days of practice before you played your next preseason game.
Great point.
So, you know, transitioning 1 week of preseason to 1 week of the regular season, yeah, you're adding game snaps, but you're really eliminating a lot of wear and tear on your body from a practice standpoint. Because as you know, a week of in-season practice is way different than a week of preseason practice. So, as soon as the new CBA proposal came through, I voted yes. It helps 95% of our league and betters 95% of our league. And the guys that it really doesn't better are the guys that are the elite, elite superstars making a ton of money. And they're going to continue to make their money anyways. That's not going to get taken from them.
Man, that's great analysis on – yes, it's not the same with a preseason regular season game, but that week leading up of training camp is grueling, and man, that's a tough week for starters during that time. So, man, I absolutely love that point. I hadn't heard that. Now, me being removed from the NFLPA, I probably would have Been up to date on that a few years ago. That's great stuff. What's the biggest adversity you faced in your NFL career, and how'd you get through it?
I think the biggest thing that, from an adversity standpoint, that I would say I faced is injuries. Injuries are the hardest part that we have to deal with as NFL football players. You work so hard all year long, and you have 16 opportunities to go out and perform and to go out and help your team win football games. And unlike other professional sports where you're playing 80-something, 160-something games, you know, if you miss a month, oh, well, you miss a month. If you miss a month in our season, you missed a quarter of the year, and you missed four games. So just a lot of the time, injuries can be out of your control. You know, I like to take pride in doing everything I can to try to prepare my body to become more durable, to not have injuries that are preventable. But oftentimes people ask, you know, how have you been so fortunate to stay on the field recently after going through injuries early in your career? And every time I answer the same and just tell them that I've had better luck.
Right.
In 2013, I caught a touchdown in Dallas, and the safety who was coming over to tackle me on the goal line missed a tackle across the goal line. He lands on my foot and it breaks. There was nothing that you can do in that instance that would have prevented it. It's just bad luck. And when you're around piles and guys are falling on your body or landing on your feet and ankles, you know, things happen. And the injury rate in the NFL is 100%. You're going to get hurt at some point. But can you prevent the injuries that are preventable? And, you know, how do you respond? You know, do you work your tail off to get back as quick as possible? And, you know, yeah, maybe you're not 100%, but, you know, a 4-week injury, you're back in 2 to 3 weeks, and you can try to help your team win again. So I would say injuries are the hardest thing that I've had to face, the biggest adversity I've had to face in my career. And it's been just that, you know, you put your head down, you work as hard as you can to get back and try to help your team win football games. And it's just when you only have 16 opportunities and you're sitting on the sideline watching your guys go out and play on Sundays, that's the hardest thing I've dealt with.
No doubt. When you get along with your teammates, when you love your teammates, you feel like you're letting them down in those instances. I've been there before. Dallas was not friendly to me either. That's where I did my ACL, PCL, lateral meniscus on chasing an interception. Wish I had never chased an interception in my career, but that cost me about 18 months of rehab. Now I played in that time, but man, that stunk. Man, beautiful stadium. That terrible place to play.
I got my revenge this year, my second time back.
Okay. And I think that leads me to my next point, because you had the one-handed catch on Sunday Night Football this year.
Yes, Dallas.
Do you practice one-handed catches?
I wouldn't say I necessarily practice them the way they tend to happen in games. You know, oftentimes you make a one-handed catch because the ball is outside the framework of your body and you can only get a hand on it. But I do practice catching the ball with one hand. And, you know, for me, I don't play special teams outside of hands team and field goal. And you walk through those on Saturday morning. So, you know, during the week of preparation, I'm not doing a whole lot during special teams. So, you know, special teams for me is a time to go catch a few hundred balls on the jugs. And, you know, that's obviously catching them in all different positions from all different angles. And in that, you catch the ball and just work on your hand-eye coordination, catching the ball with both your right and your left hand. So to answer your question, yes, I practice catching the ball with one hand, but I don't necessarily practice one-handed catches, if that makes sense.
Gotcha. That, and your one hand is as big as most people's two hands. So that gives you an unfair advantage. We'll switch off of football a little bit. What's your favorite golf course that you've played, and who's your dream foursome?
Picking one. Is it favorite golf course or favorite golf course I've played?
That you've played.
See, I've walked Augusta. I've never played it.
Same.
I would probably say my favorite golf course, Shadow Creek in Las Vegas. When you're in Vegas, obviously you're out in the middle of the desert. There's a lot of great desert courses in Vegas, but Shadow Creek looks like something that you took from the Midwest and placed it right in the middle of Las Vegas. It's absolutely beautiful, mature trees, Not very easy. So I would say that's my favorite golf course that I've played.
That hurts my soul because we were supposed to meet in Vegas to play that the week the quarantine started. And we were very close because it wasn't quite as severe at the time. We were very close to essentially getting stuck in Las Vegas on a complete lockdown.
Yeah, the golf courses might have been okay to get stuck on. The strip was shut down, so we wouldn't have been able to have any fun in Vegas, but we would have been on the golf courses at least. But
yeah,
our wives would probably not have been happy that we were stuck in Vegas on the golf courses.
Not at all.
But my dream foursome, I would say Tiger Woods, Michael Jordan, probably Charles Barkley, and myself.
That would be fun.
I got to know Charles a little bit out in Tahoe last year, playing in the American Century. You know, Charles and I would be able to have a lot of fun. You know, Michael's a pretty low handicap. He'd probably whip us. And then obviously we'd all just be watching Tiger. But, you know, you put the greatest golfer ever, you know, arguably the greatest businessman and basketball player ever. And then Charles to have some fun, mix it up. You know, Charles loves to gamble. So I'm sure there'd be some great wagers between those three. And I would just sit back and watch and enjoy the good time.
If you haven't read the story about Justin Thomas telling recently about as a kid, him gambling with Michael Jordan, you got to go read it. It's on golfchannel.com, I believe. But it's a story, long story short, Junior Bridgman brings in Michael Jordan for Derby. They're out at his dad's course. His dad's a club pro here in Louisville, and he's out on the course. And Michael Jordan knew who Justin Thomas was. He was the number one player in the country as a 16-year-old, but he looked very young. He still looks young. He's tiny.
Yeah.
And Jordan was like, "Yeah, I'll take the young kid on the back." So Justin played the last seven holes, and it was Jordan and Justin versus the other two guys in the group. And Jordan was like, "Don't worry about how much we're playing for. I got it covered, win or lose." And so Justin gets to go up on the tee, and they're like, son, you can go up to the tees up front. And he's like, "No, it's cool. I'll play the tips with you guys." And he birdied four out of seven, was four under through seven holes, and won Jordan a bunch of money.
I can't imagine how much money.
Justin Thomas is like, "That's still my favorite golf story." That'd be That's a killer awesome. Foursome. If I come up this summer, is it social distancing to be on a wakeboarding boat and be wake surfing?
Absolutely. They've opened all the launches. Social distancing applies to the lake as well. So we're all good. We can go out on the lake. The boat's in the water. The dock's in. It's gassed up. We're ready to go. The water's a little chilly right now, but by the time you guys come up this summer, we'll be good to go.
We'll put a wetsuit on if we need to. honest opinion, should I shave my goatee?
I think it looks solid. And I like the – if you had just the goatee, it might be creepy. Like Golic used to rock just the goatee in college, and it was super creepy. But I like the shorter beard with the goatee. It's a solid look. What does Les think about it?
She's kind of undecided. Like the other day, I woke up, and she was like, "All right, you're starting to get bed hair on your goatee. Like it might be time to shave it." Yeah. And then I took a shower, and she's like, "It looks fine." She's kind of undecided. I did an Instagram poll. They voted keep it, but that might just be like people wanting me to feel stupid. But hey, it's the quarantine. It's the quarantine. Who do I have to impress? Yeah. It's all good. Rudy is, to give a little background on Rudy, Rudy is an absolute all or nothing type. Like if he's getting a boat, he's getting the nicest one. If he's building a house, he's building the biggest one. Kyle decided to get a tattoo one off season. Well, then he went full sleeve. He's got some on his chest and some other places as well now. What's your next tattoo?
So I have something for both girls, you know, all my family members. And I don't have anything for Henry yet. So a piece dedicated to Henry. I'm not sure what that is. Although I did go 0 to 100 with tattoos, it took me 25 years of planning and thinking to finally pull the trigger. So I think about it for a long time before I get him. Obviously Henry just turned one in January and I'm still trying to come up with what I want to get and where I want to put it. So, Henry, something for Henry will be the next tattoo. And who knows, by then we might have number four and I can just do a package deal by then.
maybe four and five, you go twins again.
Yeah, exactly. That's always a possibility. So I got to save room in case we have a couple more.
Exactly. I have one, the tattoo ring for Leslie, and Grace is always asking, what's that for? And I say, it's for mommy. Well, where's the tattoo for me? So at some point, I got to get something for them. If my career wouldn't have ended, I was likely going to start the 2018 season with a half sleeve. And then when my career ended, I'm like, maybe I should pull the reins on that a little bit. We'll see. May go that route.
No matter what you do, you can't see it in a dress shirt, so you're good. Just don't go
Yeah.
tattooing your neck or your face or your hands. You got your wedding ring, stay off the back of your hand, you're good.
Right, no doubt. All right. If you could add one person in the world that's still alive to your quarantine right now, so it's you, Jordan, the kids, and one other person, and they're going to be there the entire quarantine, who is it and why?
So Jordan and I were talking about this earlier, and she laughed. I had two answers. I don't know if you've ever been up here when he cooks for us, but there's a chef here in town that owns a restaurant, and thankfully we were able to get to his restaurant. Chef David Fahima, and when we were able to get there right before things shut down, and A, he's one of our all-time favorite people, unbelievable personality. One of the most giving people. Obviously, he does a ton of stuff with us in the community, but one of the best chefs I've ever been around. So I was like, how awesome would it be to have Chef David here and he could just cook for us all the time? I'd come out of quarantine as a right tackle, but right tackles make way more than tight ends anyway, so that might be a good idea.
Absolutely.
But then my next suggestion, I was like, so we had the girls, since they've been born, two doors up from us, family that we're really close with. Their oldest has kind of been like the girls' go-to babysitter. And Hannah is a lifesaver for us. She's always around, always helping us out. And I was like, at this point, we need Hannah full time. Like, send her down. She can quarantine with us for 2 weeks. We'll make sure everything's good because we need help with these kids. These three they're running thin. We need another hand on deck here. And so I was like, I'm either going to say Chef David or Hannah. So I'll give a shout out to both of them. We need to add some backup to our group.
Yeah, one was extremely unselfish. One was probably a little selfish, but Jordan would benefit from both of those a
Yeah.
lot better than my initial answer without thinking about it too much was one of my buddies who likes to golf and drinks a bunch of beer and plays guitar. I was like, he'd just be entertaining, and at least I'd have someone to go down in the basement and hit balls in the simulator with. But
Yeah.
I would probably be an absent dad more than I already am hitting the golf course 4 days a week down here right now. But if you couldn't do what you do for a living now, and I'll say if you couldn't be an athlete, because I'm assuming your next would be basketball, we've talked about that. So
Yeah.
non-athlete, what would you like to do for a living if it couldn't be in sports?
If I couldn't play basketball, that was my answer. You were correct with that. If I couldn't play basketball, I studied business when I was at Notre Dame, and I had my hands in a few things from a business standpoint. And one of the things I love about business is it's very similar to sports. The harder you work, the more you put into it, the more successful you can be. And there's not like outside factors, aside from how hard you work and how much you put into it that can affect how successful you are. So I'd probably say in business, hopefully putting as much time and effort as I do into sports, and hopefully being as successful as I've been fortunate enough to be in sports.
Yeah, that's a great point too. There's so much that correlates between athletics and business. You mentioned work ethic, but it's preparation, it's game planning, it's scouting opponents, it's knowing your opponent. There's just so much that goes into it. It's mastering your craft, it's daily dedication, all of that. There's so many similarities.
And I think relationships are huge. You and I, yeah, we went to the same elementary school, the same high school. We come from the same, cut of cloth on the west side of Cincinnati. But you look around the locker room, and there aren't many things in the world that would bring together the 53 guys that are in a locker room outside of sports. And I feel like business is that way as well. You have a lot of people that come from all different walks of life, all different backgrounds, but everyone has a common goal, and that's working hard and either being more successful or making your company more successful.
No doubt. That is one of my favorite things about an NFL locker room. It's a microcosm of what society should look like. You know, with all of the racial uproar these last few years with the police and all that's going on, it's amazing when you walk in an NFL cafeteria and it's people from Florida eating with people from Ohio, from California. It's black people eating with white people, eating with foreign people. It's unbelievable. But when you all have the same mission and you all have the same cause and you respect each other because of your work ethic and your dedication, it's amazing how you see past all of that. Next question. What's your favorite book?
Oh, my favorite book. I actually, that's one of the things that I've done more in this quarantine is try to read. I've never enjoyed reading. And I used to tell people, because Sully used to always get on me about needing to read more, and I would enjoy it if I read stuff that I enjoyed. And I was like, Sully, but I promise you, like, I haven't read a book cover to cover since, like, Touchdown Tommy in fourth grade. Like, I just don't like reading. You know, I read what I have to, and I carry on. And he would always get on me about reading. And sure enough, like, in this quarantine, I picked up a few books. I got Coach Belichick's book, Tom Brady's book, a couple leadership books, a couple business books, and I really enjoyed them. But the book that I have that I got from Jordan for I can't remember, I think it might have been Easter or back, I don't remember when she got it for me, but she got it for me a little over a month ago, and it's just a daily devotional. It allows me every morning, you know, I take the first 30 minutes of my day. You know, I'm always been an early riser. When I go into work during the season, you know, my alarm goes off at 4:45 and I leave the house by 5 and I'm in early. And, you know, obviously I don't have that routine right now. The kids still go to bed early. I still wake up early. And, you know, this has given me something like now when I wake up, the first thing I do is grab my book, spend 30 minutes. Just really, it makes me, as we're going through tough times in the world, reflect on how fortunate we are to be in the situation that we're in, to have the things that we have. And it's really been a joy to be able to read every morning.
No doubt. And I love that you're pouring it into a devotional. And it's amazing how most successful people in life all have some type of morning routine, whatever it may be. And as a football player, a lot of your morning routine is getting to the stadium mm-hmm. early and getting into that routine. And as this period of life comes where you're forced to be away from it, it's great that you're pouring into that. And it leads perfectly into the next question. What role does your faith play in your life?
Faith plays a huge role in my life. You know, growing up on the west side of Cincinnati, Catholic elementary school, Catholic high school. I went to Notre Dame, a Catholic university. And, you know, for me, like growing up, it was more, yeah, I had religion class at school. We went to church because mom and dad said so. If we had a priest that was engaging, like, you know, Father Anthony came to visitation when I was in seventh grade. And, you know, there's no one more relatable in the world than him. You know, I looked forward to going to Mass and hearing from him and getting to talk to him. But then, you know, the Catholic Church can work in the complete opposite way as well. You can get a priest who's not engaging and is not with the current times and just gets up there and, you know, you're in Mass for an hour, hour and 15 minutes, and it's like nails on a chalkboard. You just can't wait to get out. So for me, I always struggled with that as a practicing Catholic. And then, you know, when we got up here to Minneapolis, you know, obviously I'm no longer surrounded by a Catholic education, it really fell on myself. And, you know, I was fortunate to get involved with a parish here in Wayzata, and our team priest with the Vikings actually took over 3 weeks after we started going to the parish as the pastor at the parish we go to. So we've had a great faith community here. You know, Jordan and I got married at St. Bart's. All three kids have been baptized at St. Bart's. You know, Father Mike's played a huge role in our lives as adults. And the Catholic faith plays a huge role in our life as a family.
That's incredible stuff. All right, we got some rapid fire questions. What's your favorite restaurant?
Skyline.
Ooh, what's your Skyline order?
I usually get a three-way and two cheese conies with no onion.
Man, that is my exact same order. And Chris Mack, guest a couple weeks ago, his exact same order.
That's solid. You kind of get a little bit of everything.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can't just have one coney. You need two, and you get the three-way. That's awesome. Yeah. And we've been to Skyline multiple times together. I don't know if I ever put it together. We ordered the same exact thing. What was your first
car?
It was
probably after a night of drinking.
No doubt.
My first car was a 1996 Nissan Maxima. And it was sweet because it was a V6, so it was faster than a four-cylinder. So when I was cruising down Rapid Run to get to Elder on time, I could go a little faster than 25 to get there. And it had a spoiler on the back until my brother was getting his bag out of the car and he thought the trunk was open and he pulled the spoiler and ripped it off. So, that was a sweet ride that got me all the way to college. And then we got rid of it when I was in school.
Casey's not that strong. It couldn't have been. Casey actually is strong now. I follow him on social media. Casey wasn't that strong at the time. It must not have been hooked up.
Like I said, it was that would have been 2007 or 8, and it was a 96. So it had some miles on it, and it had some years on it.
I love it. Who's the most famous person in your phone?
I would say Garth Brooks.
That's a good one.
And you don't even realize it. You know, obviously you guys know Garth really well through Teammates for Kids and for his foundation. And there's no one more unassuming than Garth. And, you know, to me, he just seems like another one of my buddies in my phone. You know, he's constantly reaching out and seeing how the girls are doing. His daughters, a couple of his daughters, and one of his daughters' boyfriends actually diehard Vikings fans. So gotten to know their family really well. And like I said, every time I get answered that question, I usually go, oh, well, duh, of course it's Garth. But you don't think that because he's so unassuming and so down to earth. But then when you really think about it, he's probably one of the most famous people in the world and one of the biggest music icons to ever walk the planet. But you would never get that vibe from him.
Yeah, it's hilarious. We're doing this Instagram live here tonight. A lot of people are doing similar stuff to this on Facebook, whatever it may be. He tried to do a Facebook live and it crashed Facebook, so they had to move it to CBS. He's just an absolute superstar. But to echo your words, unbelievable how he treats people. And everybody he comes in contact with, especially what impresses me is how he treats people that can do nothing in the world for him. And yeah. I've told stories about him before on the podcast. He's absolutely incredible.
I can't believe we didn't crash Instagram. I'm kind of disappointed now that we weren't able to crash Instagram with our live.
I know. One day we'll get on here and tell a bunch of R-rated stories, and we may crash it. Maybe the word will get out and people start firing in. What was your first job?
So the first thing I made money at, I always worked the summer camps at Elder. So basketball camp, football camp, you know, you make like $130 for the whole week or whatever it is. But I played football, I played basketball, I played AAU basketball in the summer when, you know, we ended in March, it was immediately to AAU basketball and training for football. There wasn't a whole lot of time for a job. And, you know, my family was always kind of, if you're not playing sports, then you got to work. But if you're working, then, you know, obviously you won't be playing sports. So I always chose to play sports. And then in between my senior year at Elder and when I was going to Notre Dame that spring, AAU basketball, I was not playing. I was just working out. And I got a job at Paramount Fitness. And basically, I just sat behind the counter and made protein shakes for people when their workout was over and may have had a few protein shakes myself as well because I was trying to put weight on to get to school.
Yeah, allowed you to bulk up a little bit for school. Yeah, what's your favorite movie?
Favorite movie? Oh, that's a good question. Oftentimes I use the cliche of Rudy because obviously I've gone by that my whole life. I went to Notre Dame until I got to Notre Dame. Like, you know, obviously great story. Once you're there, you know, they actually filmed it on campus. So you can, the buildings, you know, they formed it in the Jack, which is now our basketball arena. It was the old football locker room. Getting to see that is kind of cool when you go back. I guess I would say Rudy. It's kind of one that is I've always kind of gone back to. And I feel like nowadays I'm not hip on any of the current movies because the movies that we're watching are the Trolls World Tour, and they, you know, whatever they find on Apple TV that they want to go back and watch. We actually watched Little Rascals the other day, so that was cool to go back to a movie from like 1994 when I was a kid that we watched and they enjoyed. So stuff like that, Space Jam. Anytime I can bring out a throwback that came out in like the early 90s, mid 90s when we were kids, and you know, you can find them on Apple TV or whatever. Those are the movies that I try to press upon the kids.
Dude, I gotta take a note from that book because I am absolutely sick of watching Frozen. And today at lunchtime, we watched Beauty and the Beast. I'm like, Can we move on to something else, please? I'm like, so, how about Toy Story? And like, no Toy Story.
Yeah, Apple TV has like this unbelievable section that we found, and it's literally like rentals under $3.99, and it's all the good old movies from the 90s. And like you said, you just rent it, watch it, and you can kind of get them to watch some of the movies that you watched 15, 20 years ago and think back to what it was like when you watched it as a kid.
Yeah, everyone, me and Leslie generally get the kids down maybe 8:30 or so. That gives us time to like watch one episode of a show, then we hit the sack. And all these people are like, man, we knocked out this show, and this show. I'm like, oh, we just finished Ozark. And we only had to knock out like this season. And we like can't knock out seasons of shows. It's unbelievable right now.
We're the same way. Like we started watching a little bit more Netflix during this quarantine that we had in the past. Like typically, you know, Henry goes down for bed, then the girls go down for bed, and it's 8:30, 8:45. And you know, like I said, I'm an early riser, so typically by 9:30, I'm ready to hit the hay and be done. And so it does. It leaves you about a half hour to dial something up. And we always just seem to find ourselves watching like Nick at Night and watching old 90s sitcoms like Friends and Full House. And The Office was on there for a while. So things like that is kind of how we buy our time at night.
And when you're in the trenches with young kids like we both are, sometimes you just need a break. And you don't like want to like dial into some super serious show. You just want to break. Well, we are going to get kicked off here any second. So I want to thank you for your time. I appreciate this. Thank you for so much impactful material that you shared tonight. Always love catching up. Tell Jordy and the kids I said hi. Keep hanging in there. Keep doing your thing. Keep training. Get ready to have another monster year this year, brother.
Thanks, Woody. I appreciate it. It was a pleasure to spend some time with you. Tell Les and all the kids we said hi.
Yep, we'll do. See you, Rudy.
See ya.
Thank you for listening to What's Next with Eric Wood. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please rate it 5 stars and subscribe. That goes a long way for us with this podcast. Tune in a couple weeks for another new episode.